Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. And Tom joins us with some New Year's advice. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hey, John Williams. More John Williams during the day is always a good thing, John.
I wish everybody agreed with that. And you know, my mom said, well, you're going to be working even more. And I said, no, I'm working later. I'm on from 10 to 2. I used to be 9 to 1. So we've just sort of shifted 1 hour over is all.
I think your mom sounds like a millennial. More work is good.
Yeah, and my mom's at home, which is the way millennials like it, too. So
exactly. There you go, John. You're coming around.
Hey, so what advice do you have for folks on the new year?
Let's not make New Year's resolutions about our careers. Let's do it 365 days. I think we have so many people that look at the new year and say, I'm going to switch jobs, and I'm going to dig in and get promoted. And, you know, this is a 365-day program is your job and your career, as is your life, quite frankly. But I'm not a life coach. I'm a careers guy. And when we look at this situation, I always hear people talk about now's the best time to look and these things in the holidays. And the core focus of a career is progression and development. And it doesn't start with calendar years. It starts, you know, it's actually a lot like corporations. You have fiscal years, and they don't always align with calendar years. And you've got to look at your career, your relationship with your boss, what you're doing, what you like, what you don't like, and how to do it better so you can make more money and have more responsibility and get a bigger sense of fulfillment.
There is a sort of a golden opportunity here, though, right now. I mean, maybe it coincides with the new year. I get your point about do it all year long. But at this point in time, with so many people leaving the workplace, with employees having leverage, it is a good time to sort of, if you were going to resolve to get a better job or a raise, this would be the time to do it, right?
Yes, I would agree with that at from 30,000 feet. Now, let's make sure we go into the details of what you just said. A better job is not always one that pays more money. And so getting more money is a positive. I'm all for it. I'm a capitalist to my bones. And I think everybody should strive to make a great living and do great things. At the same time, the problem with what most people don't realize when they take a job for more money is that there's usually higher expectations. And whether a company says that it's remote work or a company says we're only going to have you work 40 hours a week or whatever that is, people say things when things are really good. And right now, the economy is really good. And there's nothing wrong with taking advantage of it. But you've got to realize that the challenge of going to a new company is you have to go work there. And you don't know what that manager's like, what that company's like. And you really need to do some self-exploration of what you don't like about where you're currently at, and make a move for the right decisions, not just because an opportunity presents itself.
Tom, what do you think about the strategy of telling your manager that you're thinking about leaving and hoping that that maybe gets you better circumstances in your current job?
Well, number one, I don't think hope is a strategy. I do think that the idea of a conversation with your manager about what you want out of your career is really important. And I'm confident in the fact that employees should have regular conversations with their manager and say, my goal is to make X more money. My goal is to make a promotion. My goal is more responsibility. What do I need to do to achieve those things? And if you feel that you've already done those things, to bring a quasi-portfolio or an outline or a deck or whatever you want to call it, of what you accomplished in the past year or past quarter, past 6 months, and say, these are all the things I accomplished, and I'd really like to talk about a potential raise, is a very professional, viable way to go about doing things to earn more at a place you're already at and you've already demonstrated what you're capable of. I think it's a really smart thing to do.
Tom Gimbel's on a phone line, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. I wonder if part of the opportunities that are created are because so many people aren't going back to work, and that's because of COVID, maybe because of government programs, which are largely over now. I guess here's what I'm saying, Tom. I wonder if this latest Omicron variant is going to continue to sweeten the pot for employees who still want to stay in the game. I suspect more people are yet going to say, skip it, I'm never going back to work. I mean, this thing is only getting worse.
I'm not so sure I agree with that. The people we talk to, the people we place, the companies we work with, that there is a sense, because it was the holidays, to push out a return from January 3rd or January 10th to January 17th or the 24th or what have you. But the feeling from the layman is that Omicron is not as serious as Delta or the original COVID strand of 2 years ago, right, and that people are still going about their daily life, and that the feeling is that if you're vaccinated and or boosted, that you're really in the catbird seat. And I think that people, that companies want people who want to work, and there's a lot of opportunity to take advantage of. And employees still are in the driver's seat because unemployment is so low. But, you know, the expression of pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, it does apply to employees who get greedy too. And companies are in such a growth mode right now that you've got to be fairly appreciative if you're in a good position making a lot of money, because you never know when the music's going to stop and you won't have a chair.
You introduced me to a new saying.
Which is that?
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Don't be too greedy.
You've never heard that?
No.
Wow. I feel like I finally Tom Gimbel won one on John Williams. I like that.
Well, you've done it before. You did it again. Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Thank you, Tom.
Absolutely. Stay healthy, and we'll talk next week.
Happy New Year. We frequently in this segment spotlight local businesses or catch up with ones that we've known about for a long time. Some new, some been around for a while. This is one that's opening up in Ravenswood, or just has. Chris Petrone is here, Assistant General Manager at Cultivate, and there's a new brew house and restaurant over in Ravenswood. Chris, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN.
Thank you for having me, John. I really appreciate it.
This is location number 2 for you guys, right?
Actually, it's number 3. We actually have a brewery restaurant in Columbus, Ohio as well. Was our second one to open. We had an opportunity there. But this is the second one in Chicago, yes.
Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, we are a brewery, of course. Our whole focus is we do a lot of botanical brewing. So basically, we use a lot of different herbs and fruits and adjunct ingredients in the brewing process, which I feel makes a lot of really food-friendly beers. That's mostly for Ben Rue. We're doing some different ones over here at Cultivate. We've got a really nice 20-barrel oak foeder, so we're able to ferment and age some beer in that, which imparts some great flavors. We've got a great chef going on here. The menu is pretty eclectic, but we've got some really nice vegetarian and vegan forward dishes, as well as some great meat dishes as well.
Yeah, I noticed that the menu, I mean, I know of some places in town that are vegan, you know, no meat at all, and then obviously mm-hmm. places that have burgers and whatever. Is it common for restaurants to feature both, if you will?
I think it's becoming more common. I think as people, you know, in general try to eat more healthy and you know, they want to have more options when they go out. So having, you know, a lot of vegan and vegetarian-friendly dishes on our menu, I think, is a big bonus. I think it helps when you have, you know, larger parties that come in. There's something for everybody there.
Yeah.
And I think that they do it very well. So
now that you mention it, my wife always gets a meatless burger if she's going to get a sandwich. You know, she might usually just get fish anyway, but I don't even look there. So maybe that have been there for a while. So Cultivate's Kitchen, this is Carlos Cruz, right?
Yes.
Opening menu, vegetable forward, vegan friendly, includes some of Forbidden Root's favorites, the Forbidden Root Burger. Now, the Forbidden Root Burger, is that meat or no meat?
That is meat. That is a regular burger. We put some jardiniere mayo on it, you know, nice Chicago staple there with the jardiniere. Some aged cheddar. It's the same burger we've served at our old place that we've gotten some fairly good reviews on and a lot of good feedback from. So that's definitely something that we carry here as well.
Duck and dumplings, that sounds good. Cheddar and crackers, as well as a host of newly created dishes. Grilled broccolini, trout dip, and braised short ribs. That's a nice-sounding menu, my friend.
It is great. Actually, the short ribs are not braised. I like they're grilled. We do them Franken-style, almost, you know, you're familiar with, like, the way the Korean-style short ribs are done. So thinly cut and then grilled. They're marinated overnight and then grilled. One of my favorite dishes on the menu. Really, really good. The grilled broccolini is absolutely fantastic. We were blessed with this really nice wood-burning hearth that we're able to use and utilize to add some nice flavor from the wood smoke and the char on that broccolini dish.
Talk to us about the event January 6th.
Well, the opening of the tap room?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we actually have it open just lightly the last weekend. But we have another separate tap room behind the restaurant that's a separate room, a separate entity, that we're going to have operate more like a craft beer bar. So we're going to have about 16 drafts back there, but only 7 of those are ours right now. And then we have 9 from brewery friends around Chicago, and then we have to have a couple European imports back there. But that's going to be, you know, we have some board games back there, just some tables set up, just a bartender. You know, operate more kind of like your local neighborhood pub.
We're talking about Cultivate by Forbidden Root in Chicago's Ravenswood neighborhood, 4710 North Ravenswood Avenue. What's the beer that you're most proud of? Do you have a signature brew?
Well, we have, as a company, honestly, we have a strawberry basil Hefeweizen that we started as a summer seasonal that just took off. So it's now one of our best-selling beers. So it's really nice because it sounds like it's sweet, but it's not. It's actually really well-balanced and has a lot of great flavor to it. But here at Cultivate, the one I'm most excited about is the one we're doing in the oak foder, which is called the Tableau, is the name of the beer. So it's going to impart some of those oak flavors. And the more we use it, the more we brew it, we're going to get some of that kind of Brettanomyces kind of funk to the beer that does really well with food. And then things like that, we're able to portion off some of it and maybe add some, you know, different ingredients to it to kind of change the flavor profile.
What's your take on the requirement for vaccination cards at your place?
Well, I mean, we have to do it now. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with it at all. We started it last night. I wasn't here last night, but apparently things went very, very well. He talked to the people that were here last night. They said people were coming to the door with their cards and their IDs ready to go. So, you know, if that's what we need to do to get through this, then I'm all for it.
Well, last time we got to this stage, we just shut everybody down. I mean, I'm not a restaurateur, and so I don't know what's best or most beneficial for your business. But another button they can push is we'll just close everything down. If this excludes some people because they don't have a vaccination card with them, that's not good for you. But by and large, Chicago and the neighborhoods are very vaccinated. So I would imagine as long as people remember to stick it in their phone or in their purse, they're good to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And now they have the digital app, too, that you can get to your phone, which makes it a lot easier because you just have that as a QR code. That if we need to, we can scan to verify that it's legitimate, but if it's on there, it probably is.
Yeah,
I think it'd be a lot easier to fake a card than to do something like that, but I think that makes it easy. I think, you know, it's protecting our staff as well as the other guests around. I'm not sure how it's going to go. I'm being optimistic and thinking maybe that, you know, it may actually help business if people know that everybody around them is also vaccinated as opposed to not knowing when you walk into a public space.
I think that's a really good point. I think that gets lost here. Some of the reporting is, well, I'm upset about it because this is an infringement or whatever, but it might encourage the next person to go because they think it's safe.
Exactly. That's the hope, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that more people will see it that way, say, hey, you know, we weren't going to go out before because we don't know who we're sitting next to, but now because of this, we know the person we're sitting next to is vaccinated, so I don't, you know, have the fear that I once did.
Chris Patron's on the line, the assistant general manager at Cultivate. By the way, does Chicago have room for another microbrew? I mean, it just seems like we keep growing in this area month after month. How competitive is it? How good do you have to be profitable?
Well, I mean, you have to be good. You know, people aren't going to just buy your beer because you're local. It also has to be good. I think there's always room for more. You know, especially when there's innovative brewing techniques going on and different places are doing different things, that, you know, we're a pretty good community here that we welcome other people to do what we do. You know, we want to, you know, see as many people trying and succeeding as we can.
Yeah.
We have a little niche over here because, you know, not a lot of places are doing a lot of the different kind of beers that we do. We do a lot of like fruited sour beers with things like, you know, silver needle tea in the beer, or, you know, pomegranate, things like that that are lightly sour, that give a nice little tart, little effervescence to it, that are really nice. So we have, you know, a little niche cleared out for us, but I think that there's always room for more.
Do you do an IPA as well?
We do. We do some IPAs. We do more IPAs are being brewed in our West Sound location. We haven't brewed any IPAs here, but we do bring beer up from that location to serve here.
Yeah.
So we do have beers from both locations. But, yeah, we do have a couple IPAs. And then we have, you know, we have one of our main IPAs, Imperial IPA, on right now. And then we also have a variant of that, which is an Imperial IPA called Snoochie Boochies that has passion fruit and blackberry in the keg as well. So we have both of those on tap at the moment.
Don't say variant. Chris Patron is the assistant general manager at Cultivate. ForbiddenRoot.com. Sounds good, doesn't it? ForbiddenRoot.com. Nice to talk to you, Chris.
Yes, it does.
Good luck to you.
Thank you, John.
You have a good day. Joining us now, Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate. Visit Bankrate.com. Hi, Greg. Welcome back.
Happy New Year, John. Great to be with you.
Yeah, is it a happy new year now? What's your forecast here for interest rates and inflation?
I think it's the backdrop, I think, is one, it's very favorable in the sense that the economy is going to continue to grow and at a decent pace once we hopefully get beyond this current variant. And interest rates will increase, but they're coming from a really low level. And I expect pretty modest increases this year. I think what's more significant is that this is the start of what could be multiple years of rates going up. And inflation, I expect it will moderate this year, but even then it's going to settle out at a level higher than what we're used to. So I think that's another adjustment, is that rather than the sub 2% inflation we saw prior to the pandemic, we're probably looking at more like 3% for a while. But even that's contingent upon the supply chain issues. That's really been the catalyst for a lot of this inflation we've seen.
What's the relationship between interest rates and inflation? Do they always work in tandem, one playing off the other, or do they operate independently?
Well, interest rates are often the antidote for inflation. When inflation is at elevated levels, interest rates are used to bring that down to earth. In other words, you raise interest rates, you raise the cost of money. It slows consumption and demand a little bit, slows borrowing activity, and kind of takes the edge off of those the push that's moved prices higher. What's different this time, though, John, is the fact that interest rates aren't going to fix the supply chain. And the supply chain has been the impetus for a lot of what we've seen on the inflation side. So, although the Fed raising rates is, certainly, the prudent course of action when we're talking about the strength of the economy and where it is now relative to where it had been in the early stages of the pandemic, until the supply chain issues fixes itself, I'm not sure that raising interest rates is going to do much to fix that inflation problem, the pressure that so many households are feeling on the budget.
So you think this inflationary cycle is transient, that it's based not on the typical dynamics, but supply chains and things like that?
In large part, yes, but not entirely. And that's why I expect that even once we get the supply chain issues largely worked out, even then I expect inflation is going to settle in at a level higher than what we're used to, where more like the 3% area as opposed to the sub 2% that we had seen. So we're going to have to adjust, I think, to probably a couple of years of inflation that's above the trend that we've been accustomed to prior to the pandemic.
A lot of smart people are telling us, though, that this supply chain stuff doesn't even resolve itself this year. Here we are now, 2022. This is something that doesn't get fixed until next year. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, I certainly go with what those forecasts are. I mean, that's not my area of expertise, but I can certainly, I think you certainly have to take that to heart because of the fact that it is really the catalyst for a lot of the inflation. If the supply chain issues don't get fixed this year, neither's the inflation problem. And raising interest rates aren't going to do it either if we're still dealing with supply chain issues this year. There have been some reports, very early reports, that there's some easing of the backlog and supply chains. Some of the factories in Asia, for example, that had been shut down due to the Delta variant in 2021 or have reopened. again, early days. We'll see. This is not something that you just wave a magic wand and it gets better, as we've seen, because we dealt with it for much of last year, and likelihood is we'll be dealing with it for much of this year too.
You talked about how then maybe inflation goes up a little bit, or rather interest rates go up. Interest rates go up. Is there an upside to that? I mean, is this good for savers or investors?
Well, savers, it's going to be a bit of a long haul, and here's why. Interest rates are so low. Most banks are really flush with deposits, so they're not having to raise rates to bring in more. So as interest rates do start to move up, you're really going to have to be picking your spots in order to get the best return on your cash and benefit from those higher rates. A lot of the banks are not going to be passing that along. And so if we see interest rates go up a couple of times this year, a lot of banks are still going to be paying the same rate at the end of the year that they are now. You want to be at the places where they do increase their payouts in step with rising interest rates. A lot of the online savings accounts, for example, that we see right now that are already paying top dollar, that's the place to be, because not only do you improve your return now, you position yourself to benefit from rising rates, because those are going to be the banks that pass along higher rates as they come down the pike. They'll do it the quickest, and you're most likely to see the biggest bump there, as opposed to a lot of the banks that are still sitting on a pile of deposits and really don't have a whole lot of incentive. So it's going to be a bit of a long haul. I mean, the Fed ultimately wants to get inflation to 2%. Well, it's going to take a while to get inflation down to 2%. I think we can all agree on that. And it's going to take a lot of rate hikes to get interest rates up to 2%. So from the saver's perspective, you're going to be earning less than the rate of inflation, not only this year, but likely 2023 as well. It's just, the ball might start moving in the right direction this year, but it's going to be a long ride.
Man, I'm looking at some of the numbers. You guys have it broken down on your website, bankrate.com, and these are just puny numbers. 1-year CD, 5-year CD, money market accounts, savings accounts. Those are small. Nothing's above one. 1.05 for top yielding money market. Hooray.
Yeah, exactly. That's at the end of the year. So, you know, let's say we get there, but and inflation does moderate to 3%. Well, you're still in the hole by 2%, right? So this is like a multi-year process of seeing interest rates go up, seeing inflation come down to where savers can right-size that equation. And that's the scorecard you want to measure yourself by. What is your rate of return relative to inflation? Because anything less than that, you're actually losing buying power.
This will be good for equities then?
I think modest increases, you know, will be, aren't going to be a headwind to equities by and large. I think some of those go-go growth names that really were very dependent on, from a valuation standpoint, dependent on ultra low rates, that those you've already seen some pretty sharp pullbacks, they would be suspect. But the broader backdrop of an expanding economy, with rates that, even if they're increasing, they're still at pretty low levels, and it's a restrained increase. Yeah, that's a very positive environment for equities.
Well, that's my point. Where are you going to go? Which has been the point for the last couple of years, now that I think about it. It's Greg McBride, the chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Always a pleasure, Greg. Interesting numbers. You can read the full story at Bankrate.com. 2022 interest rate forecast. Nice to talk to you today, Greg.
Thank you so much, John. Appreciate it.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. 2021 was a strong year for stocks of Chicago area financial firms, but the big winner is a relatively small name in the industry. Chicago-based Byline Bancorp recorded a 77% return on investment, according to Crain's. The bank's stock far outpaced larger banks like Wintrust Financial and Northern Trust. Wintrust was up 49%, Northern Trust was up 28%. Byline's performance and its $6.6 billion in assets make it an attractive acquisition target in 2022. Workers at a Loop Starbucks have signed authorization cards asking for a unionization vote. 15 workers at the store at 155 North Wabash are eligible for union representation, and a majority of them signed the cards. This marks the first time that Midwest employees of Starbucks have asked for a union vote. The move comes just weeks after workers at a Starbucks in Buffalo, New York, voted to unionize. The workers say they want better wages, benefits, and working conditions. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander's got Business of Food, and I'm thinking, Steve, we could probably do the quiz you sent me after the news at 1 o'clock.
Okay, sure.
Is it a Italian pasta? Is it an Italian composer?
I got some music of food today, John, and this one I sang as a kid. I bet you did too. My children sang it. My grandchildren sing it. I've got a feeling Bernadette's going to be singing it soon too. All together now.
On top of spaghetti.
On top of spaghetti.
All covered with cheese.
All covered with cheese.
I lost my poor meatball.
I lost my poor meatball.
When somebody sneezed.
When somebody sneezed.
How about that for a blast from the past? From the farm to your belly, today is National Spaghetti Day. The Italians get all the credit for that one. Oh, you, if you're a farmer, you need to get credit. Thousands of people in Illinois are receiving an official-looking envelope from the USDA. It's a prequel to this year's Ag Census. Basically, they want to know if you're a farmer. And you are if you have sold at least $1,000 worth of products.
And some people will say, well, that's a big garden. Well, it is a big garden. If you work really hard at it, you can get $1,000. But did you take it to the farmer's market and sell it? If yes, or you sold it to your friends and family in some other way, then that might qualify you as a farm.
That is Mark Schleusener.
And I'm the Illinois State Statistician for USDA NAS.
Which stands for National Agricultural Statistics Service, and those fine people would sure appreciate it if you returned that survey, because it's about money.
For instance, there's USDA grants that are used to help the specialty crops industry around the country, and those dollars are apportioned out by the number of farms in each state. So it's important that all the states do a really good job of counting for these specialty crop farms, as well as the corn, soybeans, cattle, and hogs that are Illinois is kind of famous for.
If you do not return that survey, the feds will hunt you down. Just kidding. It's a confidential survey. Nobody's ever going to know what you wrote. But please do it and send it in by January 23rd.
Please go ahead and fill it out and send it back to us. Or go online. You'll do it in 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, big day at the Chicago Board of Trade today. Beans are up 34 cents at $13.90 a bushel. Corn is up 3%, 19 cents higher at $6.08. And wheat is up a dime at $7.68. And that's the business of food and spaghetti on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth's got some business stories, including, I guess, a bad look at the business climate in Illinois with people leaving. Right, Amy?
Well, it could be interpreted that way, but when you start looking at the age breakdowns, it starts to tell a little bit different story. So what I'm referring to is there was some data released from both U-Haul and United Van Lines. Catherine Davis over at Cranes pulled all that together and did some reporting on it, and it showed that Illinois was among the top outbound states in 2021. New Jersey and California were ahead, but Illinois was up there. And what was interesting is the age groups. So about 33% of those leaving Illinois were 65 and older, so already of retirement age. The second largest age group, about 24% of that group was residents 55 to 64. According to the data from United Van Lines, they said that family had a lot to do with that. Job reasons, but also retirement was one of those reasons. So I think part of it is probably the, you know, let's go move to warmer weather and not be in the snow anymore. But part of that was about a lot of, you know, a lot of job changes happened over the last couple of years. And a lot of people decided, hey, I don't like living so far away from my family and made some moves. So that's a lot of that. But we still have a swath of people that are under 55 that also left the area.
Well, that does not sound good. I'm reading the report now. Wealthier residents tended to move out of Illinois more often as well, according to the data, right?
Yeah, that's right. About 67% of those leaving Illinois were over $100,000 or more annually in terms of household income. It's about the same as it was in 2018. So I think one thing to kind of note here that Catherine noted in her reporting too was that we were already starting to see a little bit of a shift from dense urban areas to maybe college towns and smaller areas. So I think with a lot of things, you know, we saw this with e-commerce, we saw kind of trends that were already on track sort of got exacerbated by the pandemic. That said, there's still a lot of data to support exactly the opposite. And that is looking at condo sales and apartment buildings being built and rented downtown. We still see a lot of people moving into the area, making moves within the city. So I don't think anybody's clearing out just yet. But in terms of people making out-of-state moves, Illinois was leading the pack.
Yeah, okay. Let's move on to Toyota is the top-selling automaker. Is that right?
This is a fascinating story. So since 1931, GM has been the top-selling automaker car company in the company in the country. So since 1931, more people have bought GMs than anything else. Over the past year, Toyota overtook them. So that's pretty significant when you start looking at, you know, the GM has held this spot since 1931. Part of that is that Toyota was able to manage supply chain issues a little differently, better than GM. And so they navigated the semiconductor chip shortage a little bit differently and were able to make more deliveries. So that's part of it. So I'd be interested to see, you know, if they can hold that spot once the playing field is a little more equal, when we aren't seeing supply chain issues and chip shortages and things like that, to see if they hold that spot. But as of 2021, more people buy in Toyotas than anything else.
Folks are still quitting their jobs, aren't they?
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, there was a record number that was released just today, and that was 4.5 million people quit their jobs in November. So that's really pointing to a continued show of confidence in the labor market in a very big way. And so this is all based on the Labor Department's monthly job openings and labor turnover survey, kind of a mouthful there, but it's called the JOLTS report. So that came out earlier today. Accommodation, food services, hospitality, they really kind of led the way. We also saw a lot of people quitting jobs in warehousing, that sector. Also healthcare. There were a lot of people resigning from their roles in healthcare. And it seemed like the South and the Midwest kind of saw some of the bigger declines. So it was really kind of an interesting report. But again, the JOLTS report, if someone wants to kind of go down that rabbit hole, it's worth Googling and reading just to kind of see, keep your eye on that pulse. Now, that's also ahead of Friday. We're expected to see the jobless report. So I think it'll be interesting to be able to kind of look at the two of those together and see what the story is between with it, those numbers paint.
You almost wonder if we're ever going to get back to the where it was, where there seemed to be a limitless supply of people that wanted to work at fast food restaurants and all of these places that are so stressed right now to find employees. They're not rushing back. They didn't in September. Maybe they will in February. But you wonder if, in fact, that world of commerce is going to be changed for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I wonder that too, especially when you note that healthcare was part of that in the top groups of people resigning. You know, anybody in healthcare has no doubt had a very stressful couple of years professionally. We, you know, having a public health crisis, there's a lot going on and a lot of pivoting that was required. So it's not surprising to me to see that number, but I do wonder, okay, what does that look like on the other side of that when this number kind of levels off? Do people just say, I need a couple of years in maybe more of an academic or research position, then I'll go back into clinical work? Or is that going to change? I think it'll be interesting to also see how the hospitality industry continues to move forward with these kind of numbers. You know, it's also an indication that there's a lot of confidence in the labor market. So people feel empowered to quit their job because they feel, hey, now's a good time to go try to make some more money somewhere else. So that's also indicative that wages will be up for a while still.
30 seconds left, Amy. I wonder if President Obama is listening, and you have important news about his personal device, don't you?
I sure do. So if you have an old BlackBerry phone, anything, basically, if it's not running on Android software, it does not work as of today. You can't even call 911 on it. You can't make calls, send texts, use the data, absolutely anything. I can't imagine many people do have a lot of BlackBerries, but if you do, if you've got one sitting around, it's pretty much just kind of a doorstopper after today.
Yeah. Or a conversation piece. I wish I had my first computer.
Also,
you know, that was it was the size of a garbage can. It had the same amount of storage, too, I might add. It was amazing how much hardware went into very little power compared to today. That's Amy Guth. Thanks, Amy. We'll visit again soon on
Thanks
the
so much, John.
Business Lunch.